The one-shot COVID-19 vaccine will now be an option for millions of Americans. We'll tell you when it will become available. And on the topic of the pandemic, the questions and issues surrounding proof of vaccination.
They're looking at whether you need a passport or a proof that you're not infected with the virus to go about your daily life, to go and buy milk or to go to a sports stadium.
Also today, Citigroup gets a new leader. We'll look at the challenges she faces and the winners of last night's Golden Globes. It's Monday, March the 1st. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Johnson & Johnson's single-dose COVID-19 vaccine has been given the green light by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The company expects to ship about 4 million doses right away, with the expectation of a total of 100 million doses for use in the U.S. by the end of June. In just a bit, we'll talk about the proof that may be required to show you're vaccinated. Former President Donald Trump has spoken for the first time since leaving office, appearing at the annual Conservative Political Action Conference this weekend. He teased a 2024 run for the White House and cast himself as the GOP standard bearer.
With your help, we will take back the House. We will win the Senate. And then a Republican president will make a triumphant return to the White House. And I wonder who that will be.
In his 90-minute speech in Orlando, Trump denounced Republicans who had voted to impeach him for his role in the January 6th Capitol riot. He also slammed President Biden on a number of counts. Our Washington reporter Joshua Jamerson spent the weekend at CPAC and has more.
I think what the message was out of CPAC generally, and the president, the former president's speech really personified that, was for all those in Washington who still had lingering doubts about what the Republican Party represented today, the answer is that it very much represents former President Trump and the message he ran on in 2016 and the policies he shepherded over 4 years in the White House. And the president sought to champion that message of the base is with me by pointing out the fact that there's just a few Republicans in Washington. He cast it as a few Republicans in Washington who had disowned him after the January 6th riots, and that most of the party was still with him. And, he really tried to present a united front on that.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said he's truly sorry that some of his past interactions with staff have been interpreted as unwanted flirtation. Cuomo, who faces sexual harassment accusations from two former aides, acknowledged late Sunday that he had sometimes teased staffers about their personal lives, but said he never inappropriately touched or propositioned anyone. The Democratic governor agreed to the state attorney general's plan to set up an independent probe of misconduct allegations. In a WSJ exclusive, Iran has rejected an offer by the European Union to hold direct nuclear talks with the U.S. in the coming days, risking renewed tension between Tehran and Western capitals. A senior Biden official said the U.S. was disappointed and will now consult with its European partners, as well as Russia and China, about how else Washington can pursue its diplomatic efforts. Jane Fraser takes over as chief executive of Citigroup today, making her the first woman to run a major U.S. bank. While the bank has proven to be sturdy and profitable even during the pandemic, it's struggling to keep up with rivals. Let's talk about the task at hand with markets editor Quinton Webb. He joins me from Hong Kong. Hi, Quinton.
Hi there, Mark.
So, Quinton, some perspective. Citigroup used to be the world's largest financial services firm. These days, it's dealing with regulators and really looking at its structure. What is Fraser facing?
That's right. So Citi has been overtaken by rivals such as JP Morgan and Bank of America, which are now much bigger in terms of their market capitalization and are also kind of doing better in terms of revenue and profit. And the big task really for Fraser is twofold. On the one hand, she probably needs to simplify this big sprawling global bank. And on the other hand, she needs to kind of keep regulators on side. Late last year, the bank was ordered to fix significant deficiencies in risk management. And that basically stems from the fact that over the years, it's a kind of hodgepodge of banks that have been welded together. And it hasn't ever kind of built a unified system for identifying customers and making sure it has kind of complete track in one place of all the risks it's running, etc. So those two tasks together are the things that Fraser has to tackle.
And Quentin, what do we know about Jane Fraser? She's done some very heavy lifting before.
That's right. So she has been at Citi the best part of two decades. She joined in 2004. So she ran the strategy division during the financial crisis. She ran the private bank. She has been in charge of mortgages. She's looked after Latin America, and she's most recently the head of the consumer bank. And before Citi, she has a pretty stellar pedigree as well. She worked both at Goldman Sachs and at McKinsey. And as our profile says, you know, she's someone who's seen as decisive, a quick strategic thinker, but also someone who's able to be empathetic in her decision making. So that's the skill set that she brings to the current task.
Speaking of the profile, you can read it right now on WSJ.com. Quentin Webb, have a good week ahead.
Thanks very much.
Just ahead, why you may need to prove you've been vaccinated against COVID-19 the next time you head to the bar, the gym, or even abroad after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
As more people get vaccinated against COVID-19, some governments are looking at ways for residents to prove they've gotten the shot. But these vaccine passports, as they are being called, are also raising questions about privacy and ethics. The Journal's Max Colchester has been following the debate. He's based in the United Kingdom, and he joins me now. Hi there, Max.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm well. So, Max, Israel was one of the first countries to roll out a vaccine passport. And as we've reported, they've been on the forefront in getting their population inoculated. What are they and many other countries using them for, and why are they getting some scrutiny?
Yeah, it looks like essentially governments are considering two things. They're either considering whether you need these vaccine passports to travel internationally on holiday or for business. Or the second thing, they're looking at whether you need a passport or a proof that you're not infected with the virus to go about your daily life, to go and buy milk or to go to a sports stadium or to go to the gym or a bar. And I think it's this second idea that's particularly contentious. I think a lot of governments have kind of accepted there's going to have to be some sort of check for international travel, but whether you really need this for people to live their daily lives, that's what's really controversial. And it seems that several governments, and you mentioned Israel, but also Saudi Arabia are looking at, have instituted such an app, are putting in place measures that would control, whether you can go and live your daily life without having got, as long as you've got a vaccine. And that's a very, very controversial thing.
Let's talk about the controversy. What's the debate? It seems like privacy is part of it.
Yeah, privacy is part of it, but also there's a fear that it would create a sort of second-class citizens, those who can't get the vaccine or who are refusing to get the vaccine. At the moment, for example, in the UK, if you're pregnant, you're advised not to get a vaccine. If you're a young person in the UK, for example, which has a very advanced vaccine rollout, you're not going to have access to a vaccine until potentially this summer. So is it fair to exclude people who refuse to be vaccinated for medical or ethical reasons from, taking part in daily life? And that's the big question, is whether that's a cost that society should bear.
And Max, there's already an international medical passport, the yellow card, that travelers to developing countries need to get to prove they've had a yellow fever or a cholera shot, for example. How do you see this playing out for COVID? Will we have a global consensus?
again, it depends on which element you're looking at. If you're looking at the element of international travel, could there be an international travel app which logs people's vaccine status potentially? But then, you know, from a domestic perspective, you know, will there be an international system for people to check in and out of various venues and prove that they're inoculated against the disease? That might be harder. And I suspect that's something that the private sector will probably lead on. We've seen IBM already creating a system where people can share their health records with businesses or their own employers. You can imagine other big tech companies getting involved in this to create a sort of safe way to share health records with people that people, you know, with businesses or employers that people want to share them with. But yes, as I say, the big question here is if in a country there is a successful vaccine and that there is a relatively large uptake of it, would the social and economic cost of such a system outweigh the potentially small reduction in transmission that it would confer? And I think that's the big question that will have to be looked at. And also, you know, I should caveat this by pointing out at the moment, we don't know how effective the vaccines are at stopping transmission, right? So if the vaccines don't stop transmission, is there any point in the system at all?
And you mentioned people who can't get the vaccine or don't want to. What options are they being given?
Yes, this is something that the UK government has been looking at or is looking at. They're saying that actually you could get a vaccine passport or an immunity certificate if you prove not only that you've been vaccinated, but that you've had a test. So effectively, people who don't want to be vaccinated could just get a test and prove that they are not carrying the COVID virus and therefore could go about, you know, going into gyms or whatnot. So that's one way of doing it. But again, it's a logistical headache, because does it mean that if you don't want a vaccine, you have to go and get tested every time you want to go to the pub with your friends? And that's, again, another thing that the government will have to weigh.
Max Colchester, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And finally, at last night's mostly virtual Golden Globes, some of the most memorable nominees put on their best remote performances. But there were also the ones who spoke without volume, clutched their pets, or panicked at an interrupting cell phone. The late Chadwick Boseman won for Best Performance by an Actor in a Movie Drama for his portrayal of a gifted and anguished trumpet player in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Chloe Zhao became the first woman of color to win Best Director for her film Nomadland, which also won Best Movie. The Crown won Best TV Drama, while Schitt's Creek won Best Comedy Series. For a complete list of the winners, just go to WSJ.com or the Journal app. And that's what's news for Monday. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thank you for beginning your week with us, and thanks for listening.